Session number 24691, Reel 5.
Mr. MacDonald, Reel 5. You're in Tobruk and advance party, and presumably by now the rest of the battalion had joined you.
No, they didn't join us for about 8 to 10 days, I think it was. We had to go there, and the way up the situation, you see, more so me, because I was used to drawing sketch maps and things, showing that then when they came in, exactly what was around, you know, what type of, where the wire was and all that and things like that, you know, and up the communication trenches and, anyway, we had all that done. About 10 days later, they came in. And but that night of that patrol, did I tell you, we bumped into the Gurkhas further down. Well, we went out, we were asked to go out on a patrol with the Australians, you see, while we were there. Would you like to go on this patrol? They said, well, there was a sergeant, that's my mate, I'm not a prisoner of war, and there, me, and my section, six of us. So we were the advance part, as I say. And, oh, would you like to go? So my sergeant laughed at me and said, What's the joke? Are you aware? He says, we've been in the desert for 4 years, man. Oh, anyway, that died over. Anyway, we went on this patrol. And we caught up with Kid Carno's army. God. Well, I admit, we were a regular battalion, so discipline was nothing. There was a gap in the wire, see? So you had the easy way through the wire. Well, it was all tin cans, like, and it was like a fun fair, though. It just can't do it. The racket was going on, and he's only half a mile away, Jerry. Oh, God, me and him said, God, we're going to get hell in a minute. Anyway, we managed to get through the wire. And unlike our blokes, when we went through, you just wave your hands and they opened out. Not them, all big bunches of. I'll tell you what, he was yelling like, yeah, they also took me out and all that.
He was shouting at them.
What the fool? Anyway, you see, eventually, we moved. We get to about 300 or 400 yards, and oh, hell, that was good. Well, what we were after was, you see, there's supposed to have been a small outpost forward of their lines, supposed to have had some kind of dictaphone in it or something like relaying back to them, the movements back to their lines.
Observation post.
And we had the bloody world destroy that, you see. Well, anyway, the whole Germany, even in Germany, I think they must have heard us. Anyway, what happened then were the whole hell levels, and then all of a sudden, a voice from the way caught shouts, everyone be still. So we made a, we looked up, North Star there. The sergeant says to me, hey, Mark, North Star, we'll follow that. Right, lads, where are we going? Gets across the way, and all of a sudden we got challenged. Give the password, maybe. And then all of a sudden this, we couldn't see, it was a Kirk at that time, because, you know, anyway, he calls his sergeant over, and he says something about being a queer voice or something. So he says, because my mate, they brought you at Bromley Castle, but Bellingham, and he says, he told us, see, this lot's not Australian. He's called us there. Then this officer comes through. Who are you lot? Derms. We were leaving. God, you're not the same bloody lot that was with us in the 4th Indian Division, are you? Yes, we're the ones that... Anyway, the thing about it was then, you see, that we got called into the mess sack with them. There was one of them belonged to Newcastle, another one belonged to somewhere. Two or three there, they were asking after different people they were, you know what I mean? Because when we were first relieved, what happened down there was, you see, when Italy entered the war in Eritrea and that, all our lot got sent away, and we were left on our own. And then, I forget who we joined, but the Australians then came in. And, of course, we had Johnny, at that time, in our brigade, when the Indian Division, we had the Gurkhas. And this is how we are now. Anyway, you see, and they're asking us how we were and all that, you know what I mean? And all their officers, as you know, was all trained in Britain. And all big noises. And all that. Anyway, this on the big crack of duck rubbing to him and chatting away. And so, right, don't worry, we'll get you back to the Australian lines, we'll take you back in 15 or no weeks at the moment. When's your people coming in? Oh, maybe a week's time. Yeah. Anyway, we left them and back to their doings. Everything all right? All right, everything's all right. So anyway, we gets back, everything quietens down, then our lads come in, you see. After they'd gone out, we were saying thank God for that. But then, just before, this we went there in the October, and just before the Christmas, I'm certain it was this fellow, I'm certain, Dingleby, the father, I think, of these two sons.
Yeah, we mentioned that.
Have you?
Yeah, you mentioned that last
yeah,
time.
Yeah, well, anyway, I think about he visited us, you see. And then...
What was life like in the train? I mean, just living from day to day.
Oh. Well, we see, the thing about it is you couldn't take your boots off or socks off. You didn't, because you'd never know. But the thing about it is we were lying on boxes of ammunition, you see. We were all in dugouts, you see. You get these people saying, nobody fought from the trenches and all that, you know, Second World War. I said, what the hell were we doing in Tobruk? I mean, even in Merseymatrue. We dug the trenches in Merseymatrue when we first moved in, you see.
So it was First World War conditions, in effect?
Yeah, equally as bad, yes.
Were you under fire and were they shelling you?
Oh, why? Yeah. What was happening was, you see, that, as I say, we had these small trenches leading towards your... you had your platoons there, you know what I mean, headquarters. Then your sections lead out there. And there was communication trenches leading through. But they're only about a couple of feet deep. And if you suck your arse up, you got a burst over your bum. You know what I mean? But that's what I say, I mean. But any movement, he opened. And every now and again, you see, they were experts with the mortars. And they use these molding minis, you know what I mean? And when he's come over, they said, whang like your God, he said, send you up the bloody wall. And the whining sound of their mortar shells. And at night time, we used to, every night we were on patrol, either probing or just, you know, everything.
Do you recall any patrols when you actually met them? I mean, you've mentioned the Australian one, but Dunlight Infantry patrols.
Met them.
When you met the Germans?
We had two or three tangos with them, but fairly not close, because you see, as you know yourself, with about 500 yards off each side, it was badly mined, so you didn't go too far in. But we just used to harass them, more or less, you know what I mean?
Did you ever go on any raids against the enemy positions?
Yeah, I didn't, but two or three of our people did. And one of my mates lost an eye. And we lost our corporal. My six, at that time, you see, when we first came up, I was only a lance corporal, you see. Well, my section leader, he went on one of these raids, and he got a small piece of the eye tie shrapnel. Their hand grenades... rubbish, I don't know if you heard about them, but they were just like, they weren't steel or anything, they were just tin, you know what I mean? And they just throw a lot of fragments. And he got a bit of this somewhere around his eyes, and he was sent back. And then I got hawked with him. He came and took over my lance corporal. And from that day, right through to the wake up, he was with me. And you know, we never had one wrong word. We used to do many times covering patrols and things like that. And he was my doings with a gun, Bren gun, with the lad we had, Crosby, was calling him Bing Crosby. But he'd a fire boatman down here. Was. And he was down the moor with a gun. And it was just to send him up to one side, no problems. I'll cover this side, Mac, I'll cover here. And there we were, and ready for any doings. And you know, everything you see, even when we came out there in the Malta.
Yeah, we'll come to that, of course. Yeah. We'll come to that. Yeah. You wouldn't be able to move during daylight, would you?
Oh, no.
So everything must be coming to you, at night.
Yeah, we were allowed a gallon of seawater to wash with. We had special soap to wash with. But we were only allowed one pint of fresh water. And
what could you do with one pint of fresh water in a day?
I didn't know. Anyway, I think it was only a pint. I don't know. It wasn't much more anyway. But the thing about it was, you see, that grub was just hard tack, them hard biscuits, corn biscuits. And we've got these apple rings. I don't know if you ever got them. We get the apple rings. They were like, you see them in the fruit as they are now, I think. Dried fruit.
Dried apple.
Yeah, dried apple fruit. And we have to make really different things of them. and used to make corned beef stew with these broken biscuits in it, and then
And that could only come up to you at night time when it was dark. You wouldn't be able to move during the day.
No. Well, you see, we were well armed, you see, because in the trench, in the dugout itself, you see, we'd high tie with a spandrel, high tie a jerry gun, a spandrel. Then we had the Lewis gun. Then we had a Bren. So every one of us nearly had a really automatic weapon. The Australians had captured them in 45 Dwizzies, you see. But and as I say, at night time, every night near Patley, I didn't say all of us were out patrolling, but certain Dwizzies was out nearly every night.
Did you get any chance of relaxing in the sense that, and you couldn't go very far, obviously, but did they send you back into Tobruk occasionally just to relax a little?
We used to say that all Tobruk itself, you see, was only about half a mile away, you see. We were completely surrounded, you see, right the way round by the jury. See, and they only had the harbour. As I say, when we came in there, we had to go in by destroyers, off quick and out. They couldn't get out quick enough. Australian Navy, they couldn't get out quick enough. I think we came out on the Sydney. I'm not sure, HMS Sydney, I think it was. Destroyers. But they couldn't get out quick enough. Ooh. As soon as these come in, the searchlights had to come from the funding system, and they would have to get the stuff up as quick as it could go and where you'd get out. Let's get out of that bloody place. Ooh, they couldn't get out quick enough. Anyway, see, and that was that many wrecks in the harbour itself, you see that, I mean, what's a... I was talking to a bloke only a few weeks ago, and he was in Tobruk only a few weeks ago. I don't know how he got there. But he said, that bloody effects is still there, in the Tobruk Harbour. Yeah. Anyway, you see...
And what about if anyone was wounded? What happened to them?
Well, to be honest with you, I can't remember. We just went back. I think, you see, we... Around about that time, you see... We were issued with a field dressing, you see. All of us had two pockets in the back of your KD shorts. One was for emergency ration, that chocolate, you know. It was crap, I know. And the other one was for the field dressing. Now, that field dressing was only to be used on you. If you used it on anybody else, third or anyway, the thing about it was, you see, and as I say, I mean... I can't remember anybody being, because when they got wounded out there, they were taken straight back out of your way, you see. And most of them, I think, by the top, were only flesh wounds, because we were only Harrison and all that, you see. We were never in any big engagements. They once tried to force their way through. And at that time, I don't suppose I should say this, but anyway, the Black Watch was alongside us, but the Black Watch was relieved to back, and the Essex Regiment was brought in. And I think Jerry must have known, because he had to force his way through there. Anyway, we managed to repel him, and then the Black Watch had to come back and take over again. And anyway, and what happened was then, you see, that was the end of that. Nobody got out. We couldn't get out. And the Black Watch, I think the Border Regiment, I think, was the other one. Although the regiment was with us.
It must have been quite stressful. I mean, day in, night out.
Yeah.
Night in, sorry.
Yeah.
And you're there under that pressure and strain all the time.
Yeah.
Did it affect some of the men?
What?
Did it affect some of the officers and men? Did anybody crack?
Well, we had one young boy cracked in the afterwards. You see, I mean, what annoys me, you're not in fellowship, are you? Well, you see, in fellowship, you have a section leader, you know, you see. And he's supposed to see the doings and everything else. But see, the laughable thing about it was that they keep on saying to me, you should be a section leader. Section leader? I said, I was a section leader for 6 years in Southern War. I said, look, do you know what a section leader's job is? Yeah. The welfare of your men, everything else. I said, look, put yourself in my position. I said, I had five men and four guy. When he joined us, four or five, I forget exactly. Anyway, the thing about it was, you see, that they always Hey, Corporal. Well, Mark, it was more secure. We didn't just have any doors. Could you see the company commander and ask him if he'll can do something for us? I said, what's the trouble? What happened was, you see, and this is the gospel truth, is he had this letter from home. He was only just turned 18, he just joined us. Like, he says, well, he says, I was supposed to be engaged to this lass, you see. Now, my mother's wrote and told us, he'd been with us for about 6 months or more, that she'd been going around with the youngest and she was in the family way. So I said, well, what am I going to do about that? I said, I can't do anything about that. He said, well, they send me home. Oh, I said, yeah, you'll get home all right. I said, no, no, there's no fear of that. They said, anyway, he says, do you want to see about it? He said, well, I can't see what I can do, can I? I said, I'm sorry, I said, I don't think there is. But that's the kind of problem we're getting all the time, you see. And,
that must have been very, very difficult for anyone getting a Dear John letter.
Yeah.
And what happened to him then when he
just forgot it.
He got on with his job, he stayed.
Oh, I mean, he'd been in the pits from the 14, 15-year-old, and then as soon as the war started, he out. That was a laughable thing about it. So when the order came out about anybody could go back to the pits or to the yards if they wanted to go back, none of the ours went back. No, what? I'd rather die here than die in the bloody pits. No, no one wanted to go back. And, the same thing happens, I say, when we went into Syria. We got relieved by the bloody, we got reinforced by the Duins.
Who's that? Who's that that reinforced you?
Essex Regiment. With about 100 of them.
Oh, that's right, you got a draft, didn't you? You got a big draft.
Yeah, we got a Essex. Big draft from the Essex.
How did they settle in, men from the south and the Durhams?
Brilliant. We couldn't get rid of them. No, what happened was, you see, as a matter of fact, I met one of them on the reunion. You see, and I'm looking around for anybody wearing the African star thing. And also I seen this old fella, he says, oh, he said, what? He said, I was, and I wasn't. I said, what do you mean? I joined you in Palestine, he says, when we handed over for the Essex Regiment. And I says, did any of it? No, what? He said, to be honest with you, he says, what happened was, you see, I've just must mind me. Well, the bloke he was talking about was one of our buglers. And he says, we got that friendly with him. He says, even the people used to say, you're talking more like bloody Geordies and Wakeups now. He said, well, we've been with these 3 months, I think it was, something like that. And you could go back to your own doings now. That's when we came out of the series, go to the Malta. Well, you can go back to your... Oh, we're not coming back.
Stayed with the Durhams.
I wouldn't go back. No.
The problems of getting food and water to you when you're in the line in Tobruk, was it difficult? Did you get supplies every day?
Yeah, we had to go back and get them. Crawl all the way back.
That's a carrier party.
Yeah. That's when we met them RHA boats. Different sections used to take their turns going back and bringing the supplies forward.
You wouldn't be able to use fire in the line, were you? You couldn't have a fire. It'd be dangerous, was it?
No, I don't think we ever had any bloody fires. I think we used to have a special part of the dug off, you know what I mean, where we could do it. And he used to smoke yourselves out mostly, but I mean, the thing about it was, he wouldn't see that, not during the day.
What about mail? Did you get any mail whilst you were in Tobruk?
Oh, well, we got mail.
It was coming through to you.
Yeah. We get them air cards. And then, as I say, we were in Tobruk when the Jap bombed Pearl Harbor. I don't suppose I should say this, but you all cheered like hell. Because we know then we had the greatest navy in the world, the greatest army and the greatest... And we had nothing. Because, I mean, to be very honest with you, they took about the 14th time they've got now. If anybody else had forgotten, it was us. I mean, England forgot we used to because, I mean, the point about it was, you see, the Australians had all gone, they were in Greece, Crete and everything, and we were left there facing... And what happened was, you see, that... we had no hope of getting out. Then all of a sudden, when we heard this news, oh, it was great. It's nasty to say it like that, anyway. But the thing about it was then, you see, then within a couple of days, Auchinleck's colonial division pushed forward. And as they pushed up, we had to push out to rejoin them, you see. So we pushed ourselves out and joined up with the watch and all that. And we had to take this air drum, something like that. Anyway, we occupied the air drum until such times as they came through. Once they came through, we got...
What are your own personal memories of that?
Well, you see, the thing about it was, we started off when we pushed, as we pushed out, we lost our platoon commander. I forget his name again. He got a direct hit off one of them small shells. Anyway, he was killed within 10 minutes of us pushing out. And we had two or three more with slight wounds. But then, people say the Scots are brave, but you never seen anything like it. We were alongside the watch, you know what I'm saying? The pipe in front was playing around the bloody pipes. You couldn't tell whether it was really the pipes going or the shit flying around your ears. Normally, under normal circumstances, you'd go far forward and you'd drop. But not that, so you were buggered. And we were just going forward, pushing forward, you see. He was hit twice and still he got up playing on. I think he got the DCM and by, he should have got the bloody VC. That was his doings with him, you see.
Did you ever get into a situation where you had to use the bayonet?
Oh, I. We that was the place where we were fighting for trenches. Well, no end thing. Every now and again you fell into a bloody trench and you finished yourself looking into the eyes of somebody. But the thing about it was, mostly. They left the eye ties in front and they buggered off, you see, and we were fairly well out.
Do you recall when the actual relieving force did meet you, you came together?
Well, I don't think we ever, I think only the headquarters seen it, because they were pushing on. As I say, we had to occupy this air drum, and we occupied the air drum, and we had a good misfortune of being bombed by the bloody Yankee Air Force, no sooner settled in, looking at, we will make a dive for it, they were bombing us and bloody machine gunning us. We were very lucky we didn't lose anybody. And all of a sudden, they did a pretty two inches in the way, and I must have realised that, God.
It must have been a great relief to know that the siege was over.
Right. It was really great. But you see, the laughable thing about it was, you see, that when we come back, with our people, it was... You had to be in our lot to be doing it, because they're all idiots, man, they were. Everything was a joke, you know what I mean? Even when you were going into the line or something, there's always somebody cracking a joke or something like that. They talk about the joy, they're the funniest boogers in the world. Never really, nobody had a bad doings about anybody. It was always fun and laughter. And then when we came out, we were sent back to base. Like, we hadn't been there, really. We got a week's leave or something in Cara. Then we were on the my main cruiser, the Manxman. And on our way to bloody Malta to reinforce the island of Malta.
Yeah. What are your memories of that particular journey?
Oh, well, we had it was very quiet, you see, because we were pushing up, you see. Auchinleck was pushing up, so we got freedom. When we landed in Malta, we had a couple of months, peace. We even played cricket, see, so we couldn't believe it. Anyway, it was great. Then once we couldn't get any, they couldn't get any reinforcements, I was saying before, see, because they were thinking of England being invaded and bloody other things, you see. And consequently, you see, we allowed the Germans to come into Libya once they came in.
About what date did you get to Malta?
Early January, about the middle of January, because we left. as I say, it was a December. We spent Christmas and New Year in Tobruk. And then on the 7th of December, it was declared war. And then about, I think it'd be about the 2nd or 3rd of January, that the Auchinlechs come out, we forced their way out. It'd be about the middle of January when we went back to
Malta.
Then it'd be about only a couple of weeks later, we were in Tobruk, in Malta, for that.
Where were you in, whereabouts were you in Malta?
We were in a little place. Have you been to Malta at all? No, anyway, we were in a little village called. We were in Rabat, anyway, the bigger place. And then we were in a small village just outside. I've got the name of it. Anyway, just beside there, it was like an old monastery place. And it was being used as an orphanage for the kids and all that. And we were dug in around this monastery and all that. And we used to, every time there was a raid on, we used to make our way, make certain that the kids were all right, the kids and stuff. And we were issued there with this chocolate crap, it was unsweetened chocolate. But we used to give all ours to the kids. And the laughable thing about it was, the Mother Superior belonged to Newcastle. Well, and every time they went in, well, our blokes, I say again, we used to go in, make sure the kids were all right. Teaching them to sing Blading Races, and you think, and there they were. Honestly, it was laughable when you were in there. All the kids used to flop in the letter. It was marvellous.
What were you, where were you living? What were you living in?
Tents. We were dug in, though, about 4 or 5 feet down, you know what I mean? And these were just on the top of the dunes.
How did you find the Maltese?
We didn't. Because, you see, they were proprietary, you see? And what was happening was, you see, they were had a lot of wallaces on there, you see? You know what I mean?
So they were sending radio messages to?
They were getting it from the bloody tours, Italy, you see, and England. But what happened was, you see, we got when we went there, we were told we got elected the next morning off the brigadier. I think he was, I forget his name again, but he was the same brigadier that was in charge of our brigade in Tobruk. And he said, "Now you've come here to do a job." He says, "You're the only people here that's been in action. So when we do any doings, is you're the enemy." He said, "I don't give a bugger what damage you do. You can use your Bangalore torpedo, you blow up all the bloody doings. But they've got to be aware of it, you see." Anyway, we see one
that you would act as the enemy in a scheme or a
training. Yeah, in a scheme, we were the enemy. Always the enemy over.